Welcome to another episode of Final Block. I'm Chris Barry, and this is the British Judo Podcast, where we interview world-class performance program coaches and support staff. And once again this week, joined by Denny Roberts. How you doing, Denny?
How you doing, UI?
Not too bad, thanks. How are you?
Good, good, good. Excellent. Looking forward to this episode.
Oh yes, oh yes. And this week we have a really special episode for everybody. We've got World and Olympic medalist Kate Howie and head coach of the GB program. Welcome, Kate.
Hello, guys. How you doing?
Not too bad. Kate Howie
MBE, mate, I think.
Kate Howie MBE. Yeah, my mistake. Sorry, Kate.
Yeah, always, always.
How's everybody doing in their quarantine?
Not too bad, if I'm honest. Keeping myself busy with a bit of online coaching and stuff with the players. But apart from that, you just do what you've got to do and you keep yourself busy.
Yeah, so how are you going about doing that online coaching?
Basically through Zoom or Teams. The players all log in on a Zoom. Like yesterday we had 30 players or something online doing a HIIT session. There has been smaller groups than that. I know Jamie has been doing smaller groups every week or every other day actually for Jamie. Just to keep the players interested and also so they don't feel like they're training alone. So basically through Zoom or Microsoft Teams, we've been keeping in contact. So it's difficult on your own at the best of times. So just completely when you can't actually go out for too long anyway, it's good fun to have everybody online at once. Yeah.
Still keeps that team feel, don't it? That team element to the setup.
Yeah.
Bring
it back online again.
Yeah, cause it must be the same for a lot of people feeling a little bit remote and exposed and without much to do. So that kind of thing just brings everyone together.
Even your everyday runner, like at the minute they're going out for 2 hour runs or 3 hour runs, which they'd only normally do half an hour a week. You know, it's everybody's gone a bit stir crazy, so they just want to get out and about and do the exercise that they can, and that's one thing that they can do on their own. So. And obviously with social media and the way we are at the minute, we don't have to be on our own. So the group feel is really good to keep the team together.
So the focus this week is on your experiences as a coach and an athlete, Kate. So for those who don't know, and if you don't, then you must have been living in a cave. Kate Howie is a double Olympic medalist and world champion and is the head coach of the GB World Class Performance Programme. And is therefore coached in Olympic and world finals as well. So, Kate, that's obviously been a fairly illustrious career so far. How do you find the sort of differences between competing at that level and then coaching at that level?
I think the biggest thing, and it was probably the biggest thing that I can't control, because obviously as a player, it's all about control the controllables. But as a coach, you're not in control, and that's the biggest thing that I probably struggle with, because you're mat side with the player as a coach, and verbally you might say something, but you can't physically change something in a fight. Whereas as a player, obviously it is all up to you, and you can change whatever needs to be changed.
Yeah. Did you always set out to be a coach? As a player, was you thinking, oh, I want to be coaching when I retire? Or
no. No, if I'm honest, as a kid when I was growing up, I wanted to be a policewoman. But then obviously I was good at judo, had some success even as a youngster. So I sort of drifted into judo and then obviously international judo. And then it was more of a, got to near enough the end of my career and I thought, oh my God, what am I going to do? I've done judo for so much of my life. What am I going to do? And slightly different back then because we didn't have lifestyle people that could point you in different directions. And something came up within British Judo just before I retired. So I thought, why not? Let's have a go at this. It was a regional development officer role. So it sort of eased me into coaching. So that then I started at cadet level and sort of worked my way through. So it was never, I never set out to be a judo coach, but I'm very, very happy that I am a judo coach because the knowledge that I've had as a player helps me no end coach.
Yeah. And obviously then the added experience that you got from looking at judo from a different perspective, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think that's, there's some fantastic coaches out there that have never been in that situation, and I would never put them down, but there's also a bit of a niche to me that I can give some sort of advice on what it's like, how they're feeling, all that sort of stuff going into a world final, Olympic final, or any sort of major medal fight of some description, because you've been there and you've done it. So it's a little bit niche, but that's not to take anything away from people that there's so many successful coaches out there that have done it that haven't been in that situation. But it's just something that I can offer that some coaches can't offer. So it's a bit niche for me. That's all.
And that's it. I mean, the experiences everyone's got are different, and you've got to make the best with what you've got, don't you? I mean, Denny, you competed at a reasonably high level, but struggled with injury towards the end of your career, so made the transition towards coaching as well, didn't you?
Yeah, I never achieved anything what I wanted to achieve, and this was a way for me to, an avenue for me to sort of make amends of that and try and achieve some stuff as a coach, really. So yeah, I didn't achieve like Kate, what an amazing career, but yeah, I learned the skills of coaching and stuff like that, and drifted into a coach as well at British Judo as well. So a different route.
Yeah, and it just goes to show that that there are different pathways into working within a performance program as well. You don't 100%. Necessarily have to have been a world and Olympic medalist to do it, but it's more about your commitment to the role and your willingness to learn on the job, I suppose, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, as an athlete, you're so selfish. It's untrue. I'd be the first to say that I was pretty selfish, and my mum would back me up with that 100%. And that, again, is another big learning curve within. So being a player, then going into a coaching role, it's about going from being selfish to selfless. And you know what? Took me a fair few years to understand that as well, because it's not about me anymore. It's about the person that you're coaching in front of you. It's about the person that's on the mat. And it's hard. It's hard to deal with at first, because especially being successful, it was all about, in quite a big way, it was all about me. And then you sort of lose a bit of identity as well. You take a step back because it's not about you. And it's probably a massive learning curve from being successful player to going into coaching. And also, because you've been a successful player, there's people out there expect you to automatically be a great coach. So there's an added pressure of that. And you know what? When I, whatever age I was, 30 odd or whatever, when I finished the judo career, I'm learning. I'm learning on the job. And ultimately, some people need to remember that, because you haven't got all the answers. Just because you've been a successful player, you haven't got the answers. You know, you have to work at that. You have to learn. You have to learn how people tick, what motivates them. How am I going to get the best out of them with a one comment mat side? You know, it's a massive learning curve.
And this is exactly it. I mean, you were a phenomenal judo player in your day, because you dealt with the challenges that were in front of you in the style that you were best at. I mean, those were, you're great within your own world as an athlete, but when you become a coach, you've got to look at everybody else's worlds as well and understand how all those things interact.
Exactly. And also looking at other great coaches out there as well, learning a lot from other, not only judo coaches. This is like in other sports, and I've been fortunate enough to be on a UK sport course with some amazing coaches out there, and some of the stuff that you pick up from them, it's the same stuff, although it's a different sport. it's all interlinked. So, you know, you have to find your place and learn.
So, Kate, we're here to talk about your, well, being in an Olympic final as an athlete and then coaching in an Olympic final as a coach, obviously. And then what we really want to know is, like, the thoughts and the feelings that you went through in both situations. So you've won the semi-final of the Olympic Games. Where were you at that point? What are you feeling there? What's that like?
So I've come off the mat in the Olympic semi-final. I've won it with a juju, I'd like to say, Danny. I know you love a bit of groundwork. And I've come off and I'm thinking to myself, everybody's going crazy. Like, obviously, you've got a medal in your back pocket there. You know, you're in a final. British judo are going really, like, they're going crazy because of what it means for the association, what it means for everybody else. But for me, I walked off and I was like, it's not done yet. I've not finished what I want to achieve. Already got a bronze medal in 92, so I know the feeling of having a medal. So everybody's going ecstatic, and I've just walked through the media zone and everything. Everybody's saying, well done. And I'm just like, look, just leave me alone. I haven't finished what I've set out to do. I want that Olympic gold medal. And that's something I wanted since I was seven years old watching Neil Adams on the telly. That was my ultimate aim. And obviously still is, even as a coach now, is to get somebody to get an Olympic gold medal. So I parked it. I was like, right, just block everybody else out. It's me and my coach, Diane Bell, at the time. Just went to the corner. Even as a player, they used to call me Walkman in them days. Walkman Howie, because I just always put my music on just to shut myself off from everybody. And that's what I did.
Okay, Kate, so you got the Cuban girl in the final that you've fought previously. What are you thinking there? What's the game plan going into this contest?
Game plan was, like all Cubans, especially in that era, were they loved the leg grab. Not to say that I didn't love a leg grab, but they especially loved the leg grab and drop Sodi Cienagi's. That was what she had, and very erratic. So for me, basically, it was about controlling the space and double lapel to stop the Sodis. Just double lapeling her and then just bide my time to pick her off. And not to do it to Marta, because she'd thrown me with a counter the previous year in the Worlds with that technique. So the game plan was to just wear her down, possibly take her on the floor, but definitely not to do the Uchimata, which fortunately was the one thing I did, because the last thing that they said to me before I went out, don't do the Uchimata. And obviously, that's another learning curve for me. If you say somebody, don't do something, first thing that they do is that. And it literally was my first attack of the fight. So I've done the attack. I've got thrown on the counter and played catch up for the rest of the fight. So, you know, that's something that stuck with me, obviously, because it's a massive moment in life. It stuck with me about not what to do as a coach. Don't tell somebody not to do something. Especially seconds before they step on a judo mat.
Yeah, that's interesting, because Danny, we mentioned that in the opening episode, didn't we? A little bit about how being careful of the don'ts, because otherwise you might cause the ironic error.
Yeah, and it just reinforces an action that you don't obviously want to do. So yeah, so what an example, and what a time to learn that. Win an Olympic final first exchange. So was Ari down from the
down within the first 20 seconds 30 seconds of the fight. Back in them days it was a 4 minute fight still, so I had 3.5 minutes and I was chasing, and obviously the thought going through my head was, well, it's all or nothing. Probably a bit stronger words than that, but I won't say them as it's a podcast. But it's all or nothing. Just hammered her, went at her, and got her wound up to in them days a chewy, which would be a Yuko now. So one more penalty, it would have been evens and I probably would have won on a decision. But probably about a minute from the end, what the game plan before I went out was possibly get her on the floor. And I've rolled. She's done a Sodi CO, and I've latched onto the arm, fallen back onto me, onto my bum, onto my back. I've got the arm. The arm is actually out straight, and in my head I'm thinking, this could be it. This could be it. And just as it's going straight, she slipped it by about a centimetre from my groin. You can feel it. I'm pretty sure any judo player can feel that. But you can feel it when you've lost it off the joint. And obviously she didn't tap because it wasn't hurting. And I remember
Okay, so Olympic final. Yeah. You're, 40 seconds from the end?
Yeah.
You've latched onto your famous Kaori Jujigatami.
Yeah.
This is it.
This is the moment,
and it's gone. Why do you think you missed it? Did you rush it at that point? Was you too keen, or like there must have been something that was different from the previous semi final that you just won with, and then going like you're in the final, you're 40 seconds from the end. You're like you said, you're going after the girl, hunting her down.
Yeah, ultimately, I rushed it. In hindsight. 100% I rushed it. Obviously, you probably don't think you've rushed it in a fight, but it was there, and I've latched onto it. And I've even in my head, I thought, this is it, I'm going to do it. And then obviously she slipped it, and there's photos of me when the referee said stop, and I'm slouched on my knees, hands were on my lap, and I knew that was my, everybody says there's that one moment that you know though that it's it, and that was it. That was my Olympic gold medal gone. I knew that there and then, that there was no way I was going to get wound up. The dejection and the disappointment on my face is quite clear for everybody to see.
That last bit, 40 seconds or like 30 seconds to the end, was that a blur or?
Yeah, I can't remember.
Everything after that 2G attempt is just blank. It's gone.
Yeah. It's gone because and that's then, okay, the moment so, in my whole life that I trained for and everything, and I knew it had gone.
Okay, the fight's done. So, Male, the winner's there. Like, you have to do the shake hands. But what are you thinking at that point, Kate? That's like you said. That's your the little girl's 7-year-old who dreamed of being an Olympic champion. You got the bronze the previous games. You're now just That's obviously your...
Yeah, there's
where
photos.
Where are you there?
Yeah, there's photos of me and the Cuban hugging. And I remember at the time thinking, just let me go. She was that happy she wouldn't let me go. Like, she's proper hugging me. And I'm like, get off. I need to get off this mat. Because I was disappointed, but then part of me, I must have then started hugging her back because I couldn't have given any more. I trained really well. Everything went well in training. I couldn't have given any more on that day. And she was just better than me. I made a mistake. And I lost the Juji as well. So there's two mistakes within that fight. So it was down to me losing that. Not her, which is why obviously I've then started cuddling her back, giving her a hug back. And I've got off there. And I'm happy as Larry because of the day I've had. Beating the European champion in the semi, beating a few decent players that day actually, but it was like I couldn't give any more. And that's all you can ask yourself. And that's what I say to the players now as a coach. If you come off that mat and you've given 100%, you know you can't do any more. You can't do any more in training. You're just beaten by a better person. And that's sometimes how life is. It took me a long while to understand that because obviously it hurts. And even that night, I slept with it under my pillow. The Olympic medal's under my pillow. And I'm as happy as Larry because I couldn't give any more, even though it's a silver medal and it wasn't ultimately what I set out to do.
And it also, I think, shows that at the level that both of you were clearly operating at the time, it only takes that one mistake to completely change the outcome of the fight. She didn't make that mistake and you made that one mistake and that was it. Yeah. And it happened the first 20 seconds.
Yeah, exactly. And might be a big mistake and a massive learning curve in my life, but it's something that stuck with me and something that I don't do now as a coach. So it's had a negative effect on me in an Olympic final, but a positive one in my coaching career. Yeah.
So a great link there into coaching, and you're an established coach, coaching on the senior program. You're now leading up to the 2012 games. What's the difference there between your games and then going into a home games, a London games?
Difference being, it's not about me, obviously. It's about the girls that I was coaching at the time. Going into that home games, the pressure was unbelievable. Whether you're a coach, whether you're a player, whether you support staff, because everybody wants a bit of you. Because it's a home games, everybody just wants that human touch. Whereas I spoke to somebody from the 2012 Olympics today, you know, that little kids, you know, the lasting effect that any sort of conversation has on them. So from that perspective, it was totally different to when I was a player, because I never did a home games. But then coaching wise, though the environment and everything was different around us, the coaching wasn't different for me personally, because I coach Gemma Gibbons Howard, coach her every day throughout her career, because it is no difference, although it's different because it's an Olympic Games. That sounds really strange to say, but you stick to what you know, you do the normals.
Yeah, you want to create that normality, don't you? No matter what the event is, you don't want to change it to create a different atmosphere that no one's used to. And
she had a lot of firsts on that day. It was her first Olympics, obviously, first quarterfinal, first semi-final, first Olympic final. She had a lot of firsts that she was having to deal with. And it was my job as a coach to help her deal with that, to talk her through it, to say ignore the crowd, although it's very, very hard to do. You know, it was a lot of things that were different because of where it was. It might not have, but definitely as a player anyway, it might not. And I've also coached in Rio Olympics. It's not the same, even as a coach, because of being in Britain. You had Joe Public in there that never seen judo in their life, but they're shouting your name, shouting Gemma's name. And you don't get that in Rio or Sydney. You just get the Brits that are devout judo fans that have come and watched you, or it's your friends and family. Whereas you had how many thousands it was in that stadium just calling Gemma's name.
Semi-final of that Games was
outrageous.
Massive media sort of hype for judo at that point. The whole Gemma, thank you mum kind of thing. And how did that, or did it affect your day or impact on your day from that win in the semi-finals?
It's funny you should say that, because when you're in it, you're in a bubble. And obviously, I'm Matt's side with Gemma through that semi-final. And I'm, 3 metres away from her? And I've seen her do something, but I don't know what's happened. And obviously, the media's getting bigger and bigger and bigger. I'm like, what the hell's happening? I know this is a home games and everything, but it's gone, like, absolutely crazy. And I'm like, oh well, just you sort of park it and you just sort of move on. Anyway, had to get her ready for a final. It wasn't until the end of the day, when we went to the BBC studio, that I understood exactly what she'd said and why the media and the crowd was going crazy. Because you're so engrossed in what's going on the judo mat, you miss little things. And I'm ecstatic because she's won the semi-final anyway, so I'm jumping around like a loon ball probably. And I've missed that little bit. So in actually affecting our day, actually had no effect until the day had finished, when we looked at Gemma's Instagram account that's improved by 20,000 people, Twitter, whatever it is. I'm just like, Gemma, why have they gone crazy? What's going on? And then they showed the clip on BBC when we were there. And I was like, oh, makes sense.
So yeah, it's amazing that you were completely like
oblivious to
all of that. But then I suppose that's probably in part, I'd say, down to your experience as well, Kate, because, I mean, who better could Gemma have to guide her through that experience than the last British judoka to have medaled in Olympics and fought in Olympics?
I mean, she kept saying to me all day, I can't believe it. I can't bloody believe it. I can't. Kate, my thumb's really sore because she broke her thumb in two places as well. And that was one part of the day that I was like, don't worry, Jem, it's just bruised. Don't worry about it. And the doctor's behind me going, it's broke. And I'm like, yeah, she doesn't need to know that. So it's just managing her through the day and what her nerves are like, obviously before the semi-final, having to go to the side slightly so that she couldn't see Chimeo because it was freaking her out a little bit because she was a bit scary. So like moving to the side and just doing everything to help Gemma and to guide her through that day. You are totally in a bubble and oblivious to what's going on around you because all you're thinking about is Gemma and her performance.
So you're in the tunnel, you're shielding her, you have your game plan set for the fight. You as a coach, are you nervous? Are you relating it back to your games or
was this the final you're talking about?
Yeah, the final, yeah.
I'm nervous, but in a different way. I know it's probably, obviously there's more nerves, but I do genuinely get nervous before it could be anybody fighting. It's like the adrenaline starts going inside and it's a nerves in terms of, right, have we got the right game plan? What if this happens? What if that happens? How am I going to deal with, or not me deal with, how am I going to tell the player to deal with a certain situation? And you probably only get that when you stood there. When you actually stood in that tunnel is when you get all the thoughts running through your head. As a player, personally, I was just like, right, I'm just going to do my own stuff. I don't care what they're doing. I haven't got a clue. I don't really want to know. Before I used to fight them, this is how simple it was. I used to ask if they were left or right, and then I'd just get on with it. I just used to do what I would do. So obviously, as a coach, you just have to have so many different scenarios in your head in case something does not go to plan. And then you stood there and then you walk out, and that walk out is probably the bit where I get nervous because like it's all eyes on players as you're walking out, and you're walking out with the players. So I know that people around are looking at us walking out, which I don't particularly like it, which makes me nervous. Sit in the chair and then you forget everything, don't you? You just you're in the fight. So, and it's totally different to
how you're quite self-aware.
Yeah, I think I'm very self-aware walking into any room, although people think because you've won all these medals that you're not a shy person or whatever, but I'm quite self-aware going into any sort of room or anything. So for me, walking out, I'm not nervous because of the fight, I'm nervous because of that walk out.
Yeah, that's interesting. Is there anything you do to sort of try and manage that?
A bit like, obviously I've watched Denny, I'd sway side to side. I sway side to side before I actually go out. And then as a player, I don't know if they've noticed it, but I'm actually quite close to them. Like I'm standing really, really close to them. To try and shield them, to make them think that I'm with them 100%. It's also, it calms me down a bit as well. Because I can't get behind their ear and start really panting because I'm nervous. So it actually makes me breathe a bit easier and a bit slower. And then as I walk out, it's only Natalie that I talk to her. Everybody else doesn't want to be spoken to, but talking to Natalie probably helps me, if I'm honest, but obviously not every player wants that. So it's that walk out that I don't really like.
Yeah, that's interesting as well. The like Denny mentioned, the different types of people, he had them sort of classified into boxes essentially, in terms of how he likes to deal with them. Seems like you've got a group that are fairly similar in terms of not really wanting anything at that point, and then one person who needs a little bit more focus, doesn't she?
Yeah.
In direction with Natalie Powell.
Yeah, exactly. And ultimately, you give the player exactly what you need. But I think nobody actually, this is just my psyche, nobody actually thinks about the coach when they're walking out or anything. That's an internal thing that I've got. And a lot of coaches, they love that bit because it's about them. It's about their ego. It's about them walking out. It's about them sitting in the chair. It's about them coaching somebody that's Olympic champion or whatever. Whereas it's not about that for me. I've had my time as a player. So I think that's why I get quite conscious, because it's not about me. And it goes as that the only bit that people see me and I'm not doing my stuff is that little bit of walkout, which is why I don't like it. They don't see me in the tunnel. You see me walk out, and once I'm in the chair, I'm totally engrossed in what's going on. So I don't even think about
people. You know what, as a coach, I can absolutely relate to that bit. That bit seems from when they sort of pull you through to when you get to the chair. If I could skip that forward in time, because I feel very self-conscious in that moment.
I want to press fast forward on the button just to get me.
It's like a no man's land of sort of coaching, I suppose, because you're thinking, well, I need to get to that chair. And yeah. I'm not coaching at this point. I'm just walking. There's the whole sort of crowd there. You're like, I just want to get to that.
I loved it as a player. I loved the walking out and the standing on the mat, and then it was about me. Whereas now, complete opposite.
I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? Because we talk a lot about like self-regulation, like psychologically for the athletes in terms of how they manage their arousal and anxiety levels and stuff throughout the day and throughout the contest and whatever else. There's very little mention given to that when it comes to coaches. And obviously you've still got a job to do. So therefore you need to manage your anxiety arousal levels as well. And the way out, which is that's that point where you, both of you have described that you feel those nerves and you feel that pressure. Like it's something that needs to be made aware of, I suppose, isn't it?
Of course it does. And also more so now, because back in the day, didn't used to sit mat side, used to sit in the stand. So you could shout and scream and do whatever. Now you're sat in a chair and you get so engrossed in it and carried away that you start shouting when you shouldn't be shouting, and you get sent. You get sent away. You're ejected out of the seat, and then you've let your player down. You've let them down because they've got to try and, or you might not have let them down, but you feel that you've let them down because they've then got to go on and fight the rest of that fight on their own. And possibly if they lose it, is that down to you as a coach? Because this is the time that they needed you, you weren't there. So you have to manage your anxiety, your excitement, everything within that chair. But then not get too stone-faced, because you need to show the passion as well to the player that you are in that fight with them. It's a balance.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's definitely room for that passion that coaches can show in the chair, but within the boundaries of following the rules of the contest. I mean, as you say, you're no use to them if you're not in that chair. And even if they do win that contest, you're not with them for the rest of the day, are you? So.
No, exactly. So you've let them down.
That's the other penalty. So you're really not doing anybody any favours by overstepping those boundaries, are you?
No. And it's hard because you do get wrapped up in a fight.
You care about the athlete and how they're getting on, and you want to be as supportive as possible. It's about controlling that emotion, though, isn't it?
So keeping on the subject of emotions, Kate, you're in the chair, you've done the awkward walk-in, you sat in there, Gemma started a fight, and it's pretty much a replica of your fight, as in Gemma goes down Rosari from second, third exchange.
Yeah.
What are you thinking and what are you feeling at that point?
At that point... I can clearly, I pretty much said it to her all day, actually, because she went down in most fights, if I'm honest. I was like, nothing to lose now. You have to go for this. The same as what I was feeling, was it 12 years previously? You've got nothing to lose. Like, what's the worst that can end? How can it end? You get a silver medal. You've got nothing to lose. So you just go for it and give her a due. She did go for it. You know, she can finish the day just like I did, saying, I gave it everything that I did. And the emotion that's coming through me is, it wasn't a, oh, here we go again. It was a, you know, we can change this. She can throw what she did all day. She can throw anybody. She can do this. So you have to, the emotion in me was, I have to project that to Gemma to give her a lift, because you do think, you feel deflated. Oh my God, down a score, good. How am I going to get this back? But you have to turn that around. My emotion was for her to turn that around, to lift her up, to try and get that score back. It's not all lost, because there's still 3.5 minutes on the clock. You know, anything can happen. by myself. You can change it within seconds, can't you? So, and then the emotion when it finished then was, you know what? That girl gave her heart and soul, broke her bones, and there was nothing more that she could do. And she did have a great day, and that's what she needs to be congratulated on. And there was no word said. I just give her a hug, because I know what it's like to come off the mat and feel some people, not that it happened in Sydney, but some people say, you should have done this, you should have done that, you should have done this. But it's not the time and place. You know, she'd had a great day, and she needs congratulating on that. And that's, sometimes a hug speaks more than words, and that's what she needed at that time.
Yeah, I think the coaching's done at that point. You know, I mean, that's the pinnacle of most people's career. That's the journey over, and you're like, what? There's no coaching that needs to be done now. I think it's more person to person, and sort of like you've got to just whatever happens,
I mean, we talk about that bubble as well, and obviously, unbeknown to me and Gemma, you had Putin and Cameron in the crowd as well. And so I'm hugging Gemma, like, it's all right, you've done amazing, blah blah blah. And she's on a high still. And then we've got people pulling us to one side, like, just as we come off the mat, what are you doing? Like, leave her alone. This is, let us wave to the crowd and do what she needs to do. This is her moment, you know. And they're like, no, you've got to come over here, you've got to come over here. I was like, Lisa, why have I got to come? Cameron's over there. I was like, all right, okay. So had to go over and obviously meet Prime Minister and Putin. But that goes back to before with what the hell's going on, because you're in a bubble. I didn't know they were in the crowd when we walked out. Didn't know that or anything. You know, this could have been, I don't know, could have been anybody in that crowd. You just don't know. But it was her moment, and it's a moment that I wanted her to enjoy, because I know what it feels like. You feel a bit down, obviously, because you've lost, but you've given it your all. And that was her moment, especially in London, because, and with the story, which I didn't know at the time, with the I love you mom, and you know, the crowd were going mental for her, so let her have that. You know, you don't get that very often in judo, full stop.
How are you feeling at that point? Like, your job's done, essentially. Your job's
done, but it's not done, because there's the questioning after. I mean, I went to doping control and everything with her. I went to TV studios and stuff. But there's the questioning of, Kate, what if I'd done this? What if I'd done that? The job isn't done. The job's never done. There's always going to be the answers, the questions that come from all sorts of angles, because it messes with your head. You lose an Olympic final, it messes with your head. It's the what ifs. What if I'd done that? What if I'd done this? What if I'd done that? So having the experience of that, and I questioned myself for years. Like, I should have had therapy, I'm sure. But I questioned myself for years about winning a silver and not a gold. So I knew that my job hadn't finished, because Gemma would have some unanswered questions. And that's probably
your two finals are like amazingly similar. In the sense that you both had an amazing day up to that point. Your semi-finals have been probably the highlights of the day for you, each of you. You go into the contest with your plan in place, and the plan has to change very early in the contest for both of you. And then, as you said, obviously in your head you thought something stronger words, but it was like all or nothing now. And it was the same for Gemma, exactly the same. Ultimately, both ended up with the same outcome of having lost in those finals and having to manage that. I mean, the parallels there are amazing, really. And considering that you were the last person to have been in an Olympic medal match, or an Olympic final, rather, and the last two medal, she couldn't have had anyone better in her chair on that day.
No, possibly not. But you do question yourself. As a coach, you do question yourself about that.
Of course.
Could somebody else have done a better job, you know? That's where a lot of coaches will learn as well, because you're always questioning. And if you stop questioning yourself as a coach, then might as well give up.
Yeah, I think that reflective sort of practice that comes with coaching is massively important to make sure that you are certain that you've done things as well as you could have in each situation. I mean, there's no such thing as a perfect action or anything like that, but as long as you know you've given them the best opportunity.
Yeah, exactly.
I think because every situation, every fight is different. Like, it's never a replica of the same fight. So I think you're on a continuum of learning. And yeah, I think if you don't have that reflection, like Kate's talking about, you'll never get any better or progress your sort of coaching skill set if you don't reflect often. And I think I've reflected after every fight that I've won and every fight that I've lost. And as a coach being in a chair, I think, yeah, and even more so, I mean, like Olympic Games is that's has to have tripled in how you sort of feel about it, both as an athlete and a coach. I mean, talking about it must bring up all the sort of memories of both days. And
yeah, and don't get me wrong, there's some good memories in there, some really good memories, but there's some memories that hurt as well, because you're so close yet so far, if that makes sense. And my whole, if I look back now as to, obviously I fell into coaching, don't get me wrong, but the reason I coach is so that, one, the athlete can better themselves and achieve what they want to achieve, but also I want somebody to achieve what I didn't, which is an Olympic gold medal. And Gemma was so close. And hopefully, going forward, I'd have that opportunity as well, even if it's that 0.00001% that I've helped for that person to achieve, that would satisfy me as a coach and also satisfy me from an athlete's point of view, because that's originally what I set out as a 7-year-old to do.
Would you change anything, Kate, as an athlete or as a coach in your build up to the games? Or
I'd change the results. Yeah.
I wish we could all do that.
Yeah. Would I change anything? As an athlete, probably not. You know, I had a few coaches, like a British judo head coach or whatever. There was a lot of different coaches within that, and I think I learned, although at the time I probably would have wanted the one coach, wanted Roy Inman throughout my whole career rather than have different coaches. But that wasn't to be. But what I've learned from them coaches has helped me in later life. So would I change that? Probably not, because it's helped me now in terms of coaching styles, what to say, what not to say, philosophies, how coaches react on competition day, etc., etc. So I wouldn't change that. And from a coaching perspective, I'm still learning, then. It's not finished. So would I change anything? No, not yet. Not, it'll look back when I'm 60 year old, probably, and say I'd like to change X, Y, and Z. But I'm still enjoying it and I'm still learning. So ultimately, the journey, it's not finished. I can't look back and say, would I change something? Because I'm not where I want to be.
Okay, Kate, can't thank you enough for this kind of insight you've given us. It's been amazing to listen to and to learn from you. Obviously, the next sort of big thing for you looking forward is the now 2021 Games in Tokyo, now that they've been moved back. What's your sort of thinking around that at the moment, and how are you sort of feeling moving towards that target?
Obviously, came into 2020 thinking we've got 6 months now, 6 months half graft, hard graft, with the players to ultimately get some performances at the Olympic Games. But obviously, that's now 18 months away, so thought process is probably totally different. At the minute, it's all about the lockdown and when we get out of the lockdown and how we bring the players back in terms of their fitness and stuff like that, rather than, right, this is the sharp end of the competition cycle. It's not. We're deferring it a little bit. But my thoughts going into what will be 2021 is, ultimately, if we train as hard as we can, if they're focused, we've got a couple of players, well, quite a few players in there that can ultimately go and perform and win medals on the day. So it's all about making it click and how, as coaches or as a coach, I make that click so that they have their best performance. Best performance will bring medals for sure. Ultimately, I'd love a gold one. Satisfy me. Not that I wouldn't be satisfied with any kind of medal, if I'm honest, but just to get rid of that sort of seven-year-old girl itch that I had to get a gold one. But probably the same as every sport, we're stuck in a difficult time at the moment, and you know, it's about friends and family first at the minute, so it's quite hard to think forward to the games. I mean, even the stuff with will the games go ahead if there's no vaccine, all that sort of stuff, because it's uncertain, isn't it? So it's just about, it's more about looking at what tomorrow brings rather than what 18 months away brings. And that's why programs change within British Judo, so that the players aren't getting bored, so their mental health is being looked at, their well-being is being looked at, and it's about living for the day rather than living 18 months away. But ultimately, you have an eye on that.
Okay, so once again, Kate, thank you so much for all that. That was great to be a part of and to listen to you sharing these experiences. And there's nobody else that can share the experiences the same way that you have in British Judo in terms of your experience. So thank you again. And Denny, thank you again. You've been splendid.
Yep. Thank you, guys. Kate, amazing. MBE, Kate Howie, legend. It's been great to just sit here and ask the questions I probably always wanted to ask since I was little. And what a great, I hope we can do another one when you come back and talk about this gold medal that we're going to get in 2021.
I hope so too. It's been a pleasure, guys. It's good to talk about my experiences, even if they are buried somewhere in this brain, because it's a long time ago. But it's good to pass it on, and hopefully somebody will learn something from it. So thank you.
Thank you, Kate. Thank you, guys.
Thanks again for listening to another episode of The Final Block. We will be back again with more in-depth interviews with coaches and staff from the World Class Performance Programme at British Judo. Take care and thanks very much.